This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The man, brave enough to bet big against Warren Buffett. In a few minutes, he'll give us a progress report. From 8 p.m. in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. U.S. and Cuban negotiators will meet in Washington today. On the agenda, whether Cuba should be taken off the list of state sponsors of terrorism. Cuba wants off that list. U.S. banks are watching the negotiations closely. In the meantime, Americans can't use U.S. credit cards on the island. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Right now, Americans can pay for hotels and plane tickets to Cuba in advance. But once they get there,
all your expenses, you need cash for them.
That's Philip Peters, head of the Cuba Research Center in Alexandria, Virginia. He was in Havana when I spoke to him.
And you're going to rent the car, you're going to rent the cell phone, you're going to feed yourself. You're going to need about $200 a day in cash.
Peters says if Cuba were taken off the terrorism list, U.S. banks would be more willing to do business there. Jeff Thale is a Cuba analyst with the advocacy group Washington Office on Latin America. He says right now banks are leery.
What may seem like to the bank an innocent or banking arrangement could lead to substantial fines.
But Thale says even if Cuba were taken off the list, U.S. banks would still be cautious. MasterCard is removing its block on U.S. card transactions in Cuba this Sunday, but that doesn't mean your bank will clear them. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Later this morning, the U.S. government will report a revision to its main calculation of economic growth. First time round, GDP was reported as running at an annual rate of 2.6% for last quarter. This is a routine revision, including new data that's since poured in. In India, the government there has just changed the way it actually goes about calculating its GDP. And lo and behold, things seem to be looking up. The BBC's Shilpa Kanan joins us from Delhi.
The numbers are very rosy, and this is basically because the Indian government is now using a new formula to calculate the growth figures.
Now, GDP figures in any country do get routinely revised, but you're talking about something different.
It's a new methodology, which the government says is more in line with the global standards of measuring the economy at market prices by tracking the consumer rather than the wholesale inflation figures. This new method now includes also more modern things like mobile phones or LED television sets. So it was normally underrepresented, but now the urban areas far more well represented in the new method. And therefore, the government says the growth is actually very good.
But certainly India is in a different position from, say, not quite 2 years ago when the currency was plummeting and prospects seemed more bleak.
Absolutely. I mean, it's also, I think, the global crude rates because, you know, oil is one of our biggest imports. Not all economists, I must say, are happy with the new method because it seems to have confused a lot of people and they're trying to understand, is this a correct representation of the economy? Is this really how the country is growing? But for now, the government seems very positive. There's actually scope for some big bang reforms.
The BBC's Shilpa Kanan in Delhi. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The key stock index in India went up 1.67% today. Let's do some other numbers. 100-share index in London is down just 0.1%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down. Can you imagine betting against the legendary investor Warren Buffett in public for real money? Warren Buffett was trying to make a point about index funds, that this meat and potatoes boring investment strategy would beat any fancy hedge fund portfolio in the fullness of time. Well, Ted Seides, president and chief investment officer at Protégé Partners, which invests in small and specialized hedge funds, took that bet. And even though Mr. Buffett is probably chortling with mirth somewhere, Mr. Seides was willing to come in to talk about how things are going 7 years into the 10-year bet. Mr. Seides, good morning.
Good morning.
So remind us, 7 years ago, what were the rules of this bet with no less than Warren Buffett?
We made a bet where he selected a low-cost index fund, Vanguard's S&P 500 index fund, and I selected a group of hedge fund of funds, five different hedge fund of funds. Warren believed that hedge funds have high fees and therefore would be doomed to underperform.
So we're, what, 7 years in now?
We're 7 years in.
And you've been very open in writing about this. I don't know why you did this to yourself, but you wrote about your experience so far. How's it going?
Well, we're doing quite poorly,
oh dear.
As it turns out.
And it is fair to say, I remember calculating this myself, that if you had invested in the S&P 500, I think one of the years in the early 1950s, held that portfolio for 20 years till a bad stretch of the early 1970s, you wouldn't have earned any money. So are you just sort of unlucky about the 7 years that that you found this bet is taking place in? Or is there something actually wrong with hedge funds, if I may say it so bluntly?
Well, that is the fair question. It's been a period of time fueled by really two distinct periods. 2008, the first year of the bet, we all remember what happened there. And then starting in 2009, when the Fed came in with quantitative easing for the first time, the S&P 500 has returned 18% a year over the last 6 years. It's been one of the single best investments anyone could have made over that period of time. There's been no change in this question of, are fees high? I think there are some lessons about understanding the structural return of hedge funds, that the level of interest rates do matter, what part of the market or what part of the world you're exposed to matter. And then trying to get it right in terms of manager skill has always been a key part of what we do.
Ted Seides is president and chief investment officer at Protégé Partners. His piece, Betting with Buffett 7 Lean Years Later, appears in the CFA Institute's Enterprising Investors publication. Mr. Seides, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Buffett and Seides each put up enough money in a way that $1 million of the loser's money will go to charity when all this is said and done in 3 years' time. Our senior producer is Nicole Childers. Our online digital producer is Tobin Lowe. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.